Welcome to the SermonCoach.com podcast. I'm your host, Dean Wilson. As always, we're talking today with Dr. David Maines, the Executive Director of SermonCoach.com. It's our desire to help pastors create effective, life-transforming sermons. David, when you're asked to pulpit supply somewhere, how far in advance do they usually contact you?
Okay, now I have to think about that. I would say usually they're talking, five, 6 months ahead of time. Mm-hmm. Recently, I did a pulpit supply in a church where they asked me about 3.5-4 weeks ahead. And that was hard because they said, we will give you a given text. You have time to put together a sermon on this text because we're in a series. We didn't know you were coming in the area. We'd like very much for you to fill the pulpit if you could. And I said, you know, I think I can do that. The big problem is not to come there in addition to where else I'm going to be, but the problem will be how I can get a sermon ready on that topic. But yes, I accept that, and thank you for telling me what's involved. But most of the time when I'm asked to go somewhere, and usually when you're asked, you are given a specific assignment. We called you because we want you to talk on this topic. So it does mean preparation. You just can't preach old number seven. So I would say that usually we're talking pretty far in advance when people ask me to come.
Now, when you were pastoring or doing the broadcasts, how did you decide on who to ask to fill in when you were away?
This was my philosophy after a period of time. I wanted to get the best possible person I could to fill in for me. And that was because I asked kind of casually other people to fill in on occasion, and I found that it disappointed my people. Not necessarily because they were compared to me, but because they just didn't think the person was that good. And then I found when you had someone who wasn't that good, you stopped the momentum of the church. Momentum is a very important word to me. It's like a football team, you know, you've gone 3 victories in a row and then you lose badly. All of a sudden something happens. And then you're struggling to get back that sense of enthusiasm and you're riding on something. So I found if I could be away, I wanted to replace where I was with the very best possible person I could. And in order to get that person, I had to usually contact them pretty far ahead of time. And so we're talking again like a half a year. And it means saying to people, are you going to be in the area? Could I get you to pulpit fill for me? And here's where I am in terms of where I'm taking the people. And if you can keep that in mind when you come, that would be good. But working last minute, I don't think that's a good idea. Now, if you get sick, that's one thing. But if we're talking about how we're planning the year, where we're going, the pulpit supply can be really a high point of the year. And you want people to leave with the same sense of enthusiasm and delight that they've had all along. And if he's gone, our pastor is very good at replacing himself when he's gone with really good speakers. Mm-hmm. Well, I want that to be what's happening.
Did you ever use an intern or someone from the congregation?
I used both. Okay. And I found that I learned lessons with that as well. Usually, if you just say, would you do it, then you leave them totally on their own, they will bomb. I mean, they bomb badly. Because they're not skilled at what you're doing. It's like saying anything else. I mean, a bus driver could say to me from the congregation, do you mind filling in and do my bus route while I'm gone for a week? You're not going to do very well at that because you're not used to driving that route. He's an expert at it. He's done it for a long time. So you're asking the wrong person to do it. You know, you say, I got to get a guy who's better than you are because you're terrible at this. So yeah, I used interns. And when you say intern, usually they were seminary students, but I found very quickly that if I used them, I would say to them, you know, I'm going to give you the pulpit, or I'm going to give you a third of the pulpit time because I want to have 3 people speak briefly that morning, whatever. But I need you to work with me, and we're going to make sure that this is really good. And then I really put them through the paces. I actually also use people from the congregation because oftentimes God is kind of talking to people in the congregation to bring them along and maybe even introduce them to full-time ministry sometime. But I found that if you let them on their own, I mean, again, it's not their world. So you're doing them a disservice to just put them up there and say, now, okay, go take on over. I talked to a man recently. I was in his church. I visited, and he used a seminary person. That person graduated that year from seminary, and he was away, and so he had the seminarian fill in. It was terrible. I mean, Dean, it was terrible. It was agony to sit through what was there. In fact, the first thing the person said was, I've been very busy this week, and I haven't had opportunity to spend time getting a sermon ready, but I've asked the Lord to fill my mouth when I get up. And I basically said to the pastor, the Lord didn't respond positively to that prayer. Well, that was a nice way to say what I was feeling. You know, the Lord basically said, you're on your own, pal. And I said, didn't you work with it? He hadn't worked with the person at all. I said, you did that person a disservice and the congregation a disservice because he didn't know what to do. It was terrible, you know. And so I think that's not fair. I had another situation not that long ago where another pastor, it was an intern. Yeah, it was an intern. And again, the person did very poorly. And I asked the pastor, did you work with the intern? No, I just asked him if he'd fill in. And I said, well, he's not ready to do that. And you don't understand. I mean, that was like all of a sudden, here was this congregation and this minister I was talking to who had the intern. He's a good preacher. And I said, but now you have just cut off the momentum of that church for a period of, you know, it's going to take a while. And especially if somebody was there with a visitor. I mean, it would be humiliating to be a member of the church and bring a visitor and have them hear that sermon. It was bad. Now, if you ask me, do I like the intern? I think the intern's a wonderful young man. And I'm very positive, and I want to see him go on in ministry. But if you want to know whether he's capable at this point in time of filling your pulpit, the answer is a resounding no. So don't do that again. And I think that because I was quite forceful to the minister, he won't do it again. And I don't mean he won't ask the intern again, but he won't ask the intern and leave the intern on his or her own. He's going to work with them to make sure when the time comes they are ready to fill that pulpit because it's a big job.
One of the things I'm hearing you say is relates to what I've observed in some churches, and that is I have the feeling the pastor asks people to preach that will be so bad that the people will say, oh, we're so glad you're back. Please, you know, if you're on
vacation
or whatever.
That is the absolute dumbest thing I've heard for how long.
That's what I'm getting from what you're saying, yeah. Because killing the momentum of the congregation is not worth the ego boost the pastor gets when everybody says, boy, did we miss you last week.
Oh, no, that's absolutely the dumbest thinking I've heard. And it's possible that a minister would feel that way, but I can't even imagine being...
Yeah, we would certainly hope that no pastor listening to this podcast would think that way.
That's right.
Or at least they won't dare voice it after they hear us talk.
Okay.
Now, I know for a fact, as you've described, you did use... interns and seminary students and people in your congregation when you were pastoring, but did any of these people you worked with ever accuse you of being too controlling?
You're reading my mind. I've had that all my life. I've had people say that to me. And I've had those same people later say, thank you so much. You were the only person who was strong enough to force me to be good at what I'm doing. You held up a standard that was much higher than I ever held up. It's like, say you're a concert pianist, and then you say, I got double booked, but I ask Ralph Snodgrass to play for me, and he clinkers all over you. The people are mad. They got gypped, you know. Mm-hmm. Well, you don't do that. You try to find the best possible replacement. Why? For your own reputation, you want that to happen. So... And is it controlling? In fact, if I were a concert pianist, I'd say, I want to hear you play this Chopin, you know, because I want to make sure when you play it, it's up to my standards because you're representing me. And when you're in the pastorate, you're representing the Lord. So, yeah, I've had that all the time. And is it a fair criticism? Yes and no. It's fair if you say, am I pushing the person way past what they're normally used to being pushed? Yeah, it's totally fair. But if you ask me, is this something that I should be doing even as I mentor people in ministry? Of course it's what I'm supposed to be doing. And if they're making basic mistakes, I need to say to them, you know, you got six ideas here. All six are good. Which one do you want to talk on? I want to talk on all of them. Not in my pulpit, you don't. You know, you're not going to do that to my people, overwhelm them and not develop them and just throw out a bunch of challenges and make them all feel, you're not going to get by with that. You choose which one you want to talk about. And if you want, I'll tell you my input. And if you don't want, I'll tell it to you anyway, because you're in my bailiwick now. You're going to play by my rules. I found, you know, you go back in your education, Dean, and you say, who were the best teachers? They were the one who held your toe to the line. You know, yeah. You step over that line, buddy, and you're going to feel real pain. Okay. Mm-hmm. So, and you're grateful for that. Well, that's what we are in ministry. We feel strongly about this. And is the person going to say, man, that guy, he thinks he knows everything. Yeah, they're going to say that. You know, are they right? Probably not, from my opinion. And will they change me? No, they're not going to change me, because I'm going to still say, if you want to do it, you do it my way. Okay. Mm-hmm. And is my way always right? No, but in my territory,
it's right.
It's right. That's correct.
It's my house.
It's my house and my rules. Now, if you grow up and it's happened, you know, and someday I come back to your church and you say, now we're going to play by my rules, I'll do that. Now, I've never had that happen, because people always say, boy, what a wonderful privilege to have you here in the church. In fact, they usually say, you know, this man was my mentor. I never thought of myself as their mentor, but that's how they thought of me. Mm-hmm. And it's because I took it very seriously, and I pushed them, and they responded, and that was all very good. That's just all a part of what's going on, okay?
I could relate to the mentor comment, that's for sure. You've been a mentor to me in my own spiritual life.
Bless you.
Do you have a philosophy, then, that derives out of all that we've talked about regarding pulpit supply?
Yeah, I guess probably the philosophy is the exact opposite of the philosophy that you said before. You know, when you're saying, boy, they're going to be so glad to have me back, because they're going to say, you're sure better than that turkey you put in here last time. My personal feeling is if I get somebody who is really good and they say, man, he's better than you are, that's the ultimate compliment, you know. Because the very fact that that person wanted to fill my pulpit, that's a huge compliment to me. Mm-hmm. You know, I got somebody who is just phenomenally skilled. And that makes me look better. That's what makes me look better, you know. So that's basically my philosophy. Get the very best person you can. And in order to do that, usually you have to work pretty far ahead. You know, if you say at the last minute, can I get an intern? You can always get the intern. That's no problem. You can get the intern on, you know, Friday night, whatever. But you can't get the best person. So you're working ahead and you're saying, how do I find that person? My people need to hear from this person. And that would be really beautiful. And if I work far enough ahead, I think I can schedule it in. Praise the Lord, he's going to come. You know, mm-hmm. In fact, I may even sit there while he's preaching. That's fine. But I guess, Dean, I'm saying I don't want to make myself look good. I want to make Jesus look good.
Amen. So, that's right. Mm-hmm. That's right. Well, thank you for being with us for another podcast. We invite you to visit our website, sermoncoach.com. That's sermon-coach.com. We have resources there to help pastors create effective, life-transforming sermons. And we invite you to join us again for another podcast.